Hola, mis amigos. This is El Hudi, and you're listening to WGXC Acra, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. Today, we will hear about PFAS, the forever chemicals that are in drinking water locally in Cairo, in Newburgh, in Hoosick Falls, in the New Lebanon schools, in Nassau. All kinds of places have seen these forever chemicals from firefighting foam and from all kinds of other industrial uses. And New York State is now considering what the limit is going to be for allowable PFAS in drinking water. Rob Hayes of Environmental Advocates has some opinions on that. We'll hear from him this hour. We'll also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather and the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood.
MV Carbon and Zach Layton perform at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill on Friday, May 6th. WGXC will have a live web stream if you can't make it in person. MV Carbon's work focuses on sonic feedback, sound spatialization, sound morphology, and the transformative and deconstructive interrelationship between sound, image, space, and place. She is performing with Zach Layton, who will open the show. He's a guitarist, composer, curator, and teacher based in Brooklyn and Troy, New York. Tune in or turn out for MV Carbon and Zach Layton Friday, May 6th at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill from 9 to 11 p.m. The first hour will be broadcast live on 90.7 FM, and both hours will have a web stream at wgxc.org.
WGXC underwriting support has been provided by Dedicated Presentation Solutions. Allow DPS to turn your audiovisual how-do-I's into here's-how-you-cans. Visit dedicatedpresentation.com or call 845-475-8465 for more information. Dedicated Presentation Solutions, your audiovisual partner.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Rodney Shop in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Larry Parnas is reporting for the Berkshire Eagle that the Pittsfield, Massachusetts chapter of the NAACP is calling on the city's elected officials to overhaul who responds to people in the throes of a mental health crisis and shifting that responsibility away from the police. The group is making the appeal in the wake of the fatal police shooting of Miguel Estrella on March 25th. Quote, change cannot wait. Our communities of color continue to experience trauma as a result of law enforcement officers' actions and the inaction of our elected leaders. It is irresponsible and dangerous to allow these circumstances to persist, unquote. the NAACP said in a statement May 5th. Dennis Powell, chapter president, said in an interview the group's leaders believe much more can be done to prevent violence. Quote, we never thought this would happen in our community, but it has. We have to come to some solution, unquote, he said. The group has asked public officials, both municipal and state, to take specific steps, including conducting an assessment of the police department's functions, led by people named to an advisory commission who represent the city's diversity and have lived experience of the issue. The NAACP argues that city officials should not rely mainly on police to respond to mental health calls and points to programs elsewhere in Massachusetts and in Eugene, Oregon, as examples of successful alternative programs. Quote, there are many alternatives in responding to nonviolent emergency calls every day in this country, unquote, the group said. Powell recently joined the city's police advisory and review board. He said that group also intends to consider reform in how Pittsfield responds to people in crisis. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle.
Natasha Von Holdridge reports for Columbia Green Media that COVID-19 has come roaring back in Columbia County, with 67 new cases announced May 2nd, 57 new cases May 3rd, and 34 more on May 4th. Columbia County Department of Health Director Jack Mabb said, and I quote, it's twice what we would have on a Wednesday 2 weeks ago, so it's way up there right now, end quote. The positive test results are from testing facilities and pharmacies, not from home tests. Mabb said, and I quote, we have clusters everywhere right now. It's safe to say there are clusters everywhere. It's not endemic to one segment of the population. It's popping up all over, and I think it's because we're out in public. We're doing our thing, and I think people have moved on and said, whatever, it is going to be what it is, end quote. Mabb reports that 17 county residents are currently hospitalized with the virus, and two of them are in the intensive care unit. Columbia County Board of Supervisors Chair Matt Morrell said the county is taking no action because of the outbreak. Morrell said, and I quote, at this time, we're monitoring the situation. We're not prepared to take any action as of yet. Obviously, we're hoping it is a spike and it will go back down. We are monitoring this on a daily basis, end quote. The county is vaccinating every Thursday from 3 to 5:30 p.m. at Columbia Green Community College, and also from 9 to 11 a.m. May 7th at the Hudson Firehouse. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Ted Remsnyder reports for Columbia Green Media that 2 months after the Caro Town Board approved the dispersal of almost $62,000 in U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development grant funding, Town Board member Tim Powers called for the board to amend the resolution it passed on March 7th. Powers presented that amended resolution during a public meeting on May 2nd, claiming the measure would correct the public record on the board's decision to grant $50,000 to the Caro Development Foundation and $5,930 apiece to Mountain View Enterprises and Emmy Cross as part of the HUD Residential Rehabilitation Grant. As Powers began to read the amended resolution, Town Supervisor Jason Watts interjected. Quote, we've talked about this every meeting so far, Tim, unquote, Watts said. Quote, we're going to until I get a vote on it, unquote, Powers replied. Powers voting yes on the resolution and the rest of the board abstained. After the meeting, Watts said that legal action had been taken against the town as a result of the HUD funding. He said each of the parties involved is suing the town. Powers said he will wait to see the minutes from the May 2nd meeting before deciding if he will present his amended resolution to the board again. In the original March 7th resolution, Delaware Engineering was authorized by the town to act as a residential specialist for the HUD funding so it could determine the appropriateness of the various applications the town received for the money. Powers did not attend the meeting where Watts and board members Deborah Boggins, Michael Flaherty, and Mary Jo Cords voted unanimously to approve the dispersal of the HUD funding. Quote, Delaware Engineering made their recommendations to this board and the numbers were all changed, but the resolution itself wasn't, unquote, Powers said. Under Delaware Engineering's recommendation, the Caro Development Foundation would have received $22,680. Emmy Cross would have received just over $18,500, and $17,000 would have gone to Mountain View Enterprises. The original HUD grant dates back to 1998, and the town collected almost $12,000 in interest on the original $50,000 grant over the past 24 years. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Mid-Hudson News reports that Anna Maria Archilla, who is running for lieutenant governor, was in Kingston on May 5th, 2 days after Governor Kathy Hochul tapped local congressional representative Antonio Delgado for that role. Appearing at a rally calling on the state to adopt good cause eviction legislation, which has been adopted locally in Newburgh, Beacon, and Kingston. Hudson passed its own good cause law, but Mayor Kamal Johnson then vetoed the legislation, and then the Common Council failed to pass a replacement bill. Archilla is the co-executive director of the Center for Popular Democracy, a progressive advocacy group, and is running mate for Jamani Williams in the 2022 New York gubernatorial election. A week ago, with former Lieutenant Governor Brian Benjamin indicted for corruption and not running, but with his name on the ballot, her prospects for winning seemed brighter. Since then, though, the legislature passed a law to allow Benjamin's name to be taken off the ballot, and Hochul appointed Delgado as lieutenant governor. Archilla said, and I quote, "When the governor, instead of using her power to address the needs of New Yorkers who are facing an affordability crisis, she uses her power to change election law at the last minute so that she can announce a new running mate after failing to vet her first original lieutenant governor. It is clear that the game is stacked against other candidates who do not have the power to change the rules of the game." End quote. Read more about this story at Mid-Hudson News.
Rick Carlin reports for the Times Union that a state appeals court on May 5th ruled in favor of the town of Guilderland and Crossgates Mall in a case brought by an environmental group in its attempt to stop the construction of the first Costco wholesale store in the Albany region. The five-judge panel of the State Appellate Division, 3rd Department, ruled unanimously that the Guilderland Planning Board took the required, quote, hard look, unquote, at the environmental impacts of the project, which includes building a 160,000-square-foot store on Western Avenue and a large apartment complex on Rapp Road. The judges also rejected the procedural challenges raised by nonprofit Save the Pine Bush Incorporated, along with claims about the lack of a quorum when the Planning Board met in 2020 to vote on the environmental impacts and site plan approval. Town Supervisor Peter Barber said the next step will be a special use permit review by the Zoning Board of Appeals. The Syracuse-based owner of Crossgates, Pyramid Management Group, has emphasized how important the Costco store and the apartment complex are to the continued success and viability of the mall. Save the Pine Bush Incorporated is a volunteer group dedicated to saving the rare pine bush ecosystem in New York, a habitat for the endangered Karner blue butterfly. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Bill Connors reports in the Poughkeepsie Journal that the Department of Environmental Conservation is considering expanding turkey hunting. The proposed changes include changing the minimum shot size from number 8 to number 9 and starting a spring turkey season in Suffolk County on Long Island in spring 2023. DEC Commissioner Basil Sago said, and I quote, "While turkey restoration is one of the greatest success stories of modern wildlife conservation, in New York, DEC's management and protection of wild turkeys has allowed the birds to maintain self-sustaining populations in all suitable habitats of the state. This regulation change would expand hunting downstate, ensuring New York remains a premier destination for turkey hunters in the Northeast," end quote. Recent advances in shot shell technology that use heavier metals such as tungsten alloy, tungsten iron, or bismuth are said to be more humane and allow for a smaller shot size. This month is the spring turkey hunting season north of New York City. Public comments on proposed changes to turkey hunting rules can be made through June 5th by email to wildliferegs@dec.ny.gov. with proposed turkey regulations in the subject line, or by mail to Joshua Stiller, NYSDEC, 625 Broadway, Albany, New York, 12233-4754. And you can read more about this story in the Poughkeepsie Journal.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.com. WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
And now here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Friday, a chance of rain, mainly after 11 a.m. It will be cloudy with a temperature high near 63 degrees. Friday night, rain is likely mainly before 11 p.m. It will be cloudy with a temperature low of around 45 degrees. And on Saturday, a chance of rain, mostly cloudy with a high near 55 degrees. And Saturday night, a chance of showers before 2 a.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 40 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
This summer, the Athens Cultural Center presents movies in Athens Riverfront Park every second Saturday of the month, beginning around 8:30 p.m. On May 14th, they'll show Harold and Maude from 1971. June 11th, they'll show Athens resident Lisa Thomas's movie Thirsty from 2016. July 9th, they'll show A Trip to the Moon, the 1902 movie. August 13th, they'll show Summer of Soul, the Oscar-winning film from last year. And September 10th, they will display I Dream Too Much from 2015. That's the Athens Cultural Center's summer movie series in Athens Riverfront Park. You can find out more about these film showings on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, May 6th. Early morning temperatures range from 46 degrees in New Kingston to 51 degrees in regular Kingston. Soil temperature is rising comfortably above 50 degrees in all places except a couple holdout spots up on the mountain. Today warms up to 61 degrees by 1 p.m. Rain chances enter the area around that time, continuing overnight as temperatures fall to 45 degrees. Saturday is looking chilly with rain chances all day, stiff winds, and a high of 56 happening at 4 p.m. Overnight, temperatures fall to 40 degrees briefly, then bounce back up to 60 degrees on a windy but dry Sunday. 42 degrees overnight takes us into a dry, sunny Monday with a high of 66. Pollen levels for today will be high. Oak, birch, and ash being the main aggressors. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 1:07 a.m., high tide at 7:12 a.m., low tide again at 2:17 p.m., and high tide once again at 8:23 p.m. Again, those are for Friday, May 6th. Today's river temperature will be 54 degrees. Sunset today will be at 7:44 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:41 a.m. Looking way up, we see CME activity is ramping up and at least one glancing blow is expected to generate G1 class storms on Saturday. Solar wind speed is currently 392 kilometers per second at 1.3 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 15 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 1, quiet. The current sunspot number is 85. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Early Electromix is a series to document the history of experimental electronic music from the 50s to the 80s. Pioneers who paved the way for what was to become techno, ambient, electronica, and most of what we are listening to. Essential Culture on air every Tuesday from 11 to 12 a.m.
Wavefarm's WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of David Gorin of Brooklyn, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Find out where the music takes Chris Bowers on the next Deep Threes as he folds hip-hop and soundtrack influences into his evolved jazz sound. Plus tracks from Morcabella, Echoplex, Kangdon Ray, and Clinton Shorter. Deep Threes, music beyond boundaries for a digital world.
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Support for
United Airlines. United provides
support for NPR
in cities like Boston, New York, and Washington, D.C.
Underwriting today is provided
United
by
Airlines, Borders, Books, and Music,
Jutuce, Juice Bar Blend, and by Whitney Farms, producers of a complete line of
Public Radio.
.com.
United provides just another way. National Business Radio is rising. National Public Radio.
National
Business Radio
comes from
United Airlines,
Borders, Books, and Music.
Jutuce, Juice Bar Blend.
United provides just another way. National Business Radio is rising.
Public Radio.
National Public Radio. Nonstop Business
Radio.
.com.
Public
Radio.
Nonstop Business.
Underwriting today is provided by Ink to Me. That's Ink to Me Scaling.
National Public Radio.
And inktomi.com.
National Public Radio.
National Public Radio.
Nonstop Business
Radio.com.
Public Radio. National Public Radio. Nonstop Business
Radio.com.
Public Radio.com.
Soil Amendments and Mulches.com.
National Public Radio.
Public Radio.
Nonstop Business Radio.
Public Radio.
Well, lots of pretty good news there. Thanks, Joe. That report brought to you by
NationalBusinessRadio.com.
You ready?
Hands over the playoff, daughter, don't you dare!
Hello.
Sure did. It's beautiful.
I think that we have another one to take. You to just use that as is for the album. Okay, I'm going to listen to it back now. I got to go back to work.
This is Tom Rowe from Wave Farm with the WGXC Daily Radio News. On May 6, 1937, one of radio's most famous broadcasts was recorded. The hydrogen in the German passenger airship LZ-129 Hindenburg burst into flames as the new airship attempted to land in Manchester Township, New Jersey, killing 36 people. Herbert Morrison's eyewitness report for radio station WLS in Chicago of the Hindenburg disaster was not broadcast live, but recorded for a report that was broadcast the next day and has lived through the ages. It aired on other radio stations, and the audio was dubbed onto newsreel footage and shown in movie theaters. While the scale of the sinking of the Titanic was slightly larger, this was the first major disaster with a narrator calling the play-by-play, with a visual recording synced. Few people at the time had ever witnessed or listened to 36 people die at once in a terrifying scene that rivals today's Hollywood special effects. And Morrison's radio narration was the first time listeners heard someone in real time explaining what was happening during a deadly disaster, not explaining it afterwards. Watching the Challenger space shuttle disaster or the World Trade Center fall are modern-day broadcast comparisons. While today's anchors and correspondents can keep calm in most any circumstance, Morrison's call of the accident is more human, as he clearly is overwhelmed by what he is seeing, making the, quote, "oh, the humanity," unquote, phrase ring through the years. Here is the recording of Herbert Morrison from WLS in Chicago describing the Hindenburg disaster on May 6th, 1937.
It's starting to rain again. The rain had slacked up a little bit. The back motors of the ship are just holding it just enough to keep it from... It bursts into flames.
Get it started. It's flashing. It's flashing terrible. Oh, my. Get out of the way, please. It's burning, bursting into flames, and it's falling on the mooring fast, and all the folks between it. This is terrible. This is the one of the worst catastrophes in the world. Oh, it's like 400 or 500 feet into the sky, and it's a terrific crash, ladies and gentlemen. It's smoke and it's flames now, and the flame is crashing to the ground, not quite to the mooring mast. All the humanity and all the furniture is speeding around it. I don't do it. I can't even talk to people. There's friends are out there. I can't talk, ladies and gentlemen. Honestly, it's just laying there a massive smoking wreckage. And everybody can't hardly breathe and talk and screaming. Lady, I'm sorry. Honestly, I can hardly breathe. I'm going to step inside while I cannot see it. Charlie, that's terrible. Listen, folks, I'm going to have to stop for a minute because I've lost the voice. This is the worst thing I've ever witnessed.
Bye.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
She will be the first Black woman, the first out LGBTQ plus person to serve in this role, which is amazing because representation matters.
Jen Psaki introduced Karine Jean-Pierre Thursday as the next White House press secretary. Jean-Pierre will assume the role May 13th when Psaki steps down and heads to MSNBC. Amazon's labor union president, Chris Smalls, testified Thursday in a Senate hearing on whether Amazon and other companies should be barred from receiving federal contracts if they engage in anti-union activities. Smalls responded to questioning by South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham.
It is not a left or right thing. It's not a Democrat or a Republican thing. It's a workers' thing. It's a workers' issue. And we're the ones that are suffering.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer confirmed Congress will vote next week to codify the Supreme Court's abortion decision in Roe v. Wade, following the leak of a draft opinion which could, if finalized, overturn the 1973 landmark decision.
Next week's vote will be one of the most important we ever take because it deals with one of the most personal and difficult decisions a woman ever has to make in her life.
Chief Justice John Roberts called the leak, quote, absolutely appalling during an appearance Thursday at the 11th Circuit Judicial Conference. The Justice Department says it's opening a new office to advance environmental justice for communities disproportionately impacted by poor air and water quality and exposure to toxics. EPA Administrator Michael Regan.
I'm talking about children going to school right next door to chemical plants. Generations of family members diagnosed with cancer.
The FDA will restrict use of Johnson & Johnson's COVID-19 vaccine for adults 18 and over who would not otherwise become vaccinated against COVID over concerns of rare side effects, including blood clots. According to NBC News, the number of people who've died from COVID-19 across the United States has now passed 1 million since the first case was reported in Washington State in early 2020. Meanwhile, the World Health Organization reports almost 15 million deaths were caused either directly or indirectly by COVID-19 in 2020 and 2021. The judge overseeing the federal civil rights cases of four former Minneapolis police officers involved in the killing of George Floyd says he's accepted the terms of Derek Chauvin's plea agreement and will sentence him to 20 to 25 years in prison. Chauvin could have faced life in prison. I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
My name is Demian Denet Yeshe. I'm an artist, writer, poet, curator, and director of an indigenous organization, collective initiative known as RISE, which stands for Radical Indigenous Survivance and Empowerment. I currently reside in Portland, Oregon, but I am a member of the Diné tribe, which is more commonly referred to as the Navajo tribe in the Southwest, and my clans are Nestache, Tabahe, and Torochini.
Damien, welcome to Hudson Mohawk Magazine. Could you tell us a little bit about RISE?
I like to think of RISE as an indigenous-run space that whose primary focus is to amplify and create awareness around Indigenous issues. So I like to think that RISE is this continually shifting and evolving initiative that engages with various Indigenous artists and works in a transdisciplinary practice. If there's a way for us to engage and, you know, bring up topics and themes where people are being underserviced or where communities need to be celebrated, you know, RISE kind of steps in and amplifies this work. And we do so mostly through visual art and culture.
Wonderful. With the awareness and visibility around Indigenous issues, culture, knowledge, those can sometimes have both positive and negative effects. What have you noticed in the effects of the visibility and awareness around Indigenous cultures and issues?
Well, you know, there, a lot of my personal activism and inspiration came through a lot of queer activism, HIV and AIDS related activism of the, you know, late 80s, early 90s. Activism that is still taking place and is, that is still very, like, crucial, potent, and necessary to this day. I mean, you know, we're still in the midst of a pandemic. And so I you know, one phrase that is widespread throughout that and throughout the activism of these communities is silence equals death. That, of course, speaking to the silence of politicians, the silencing of HIV and AIDS communities, who were, you know, battling a deadly epidemic, and, you know, politicians who didn't want to deal with it, presidents who wouldn't even say HIV or AIDS out loud. You know, there was thousands upon thousands of deaths. Entire, you know, queer ancestors were lost to this epidemic. But within Indigenous communities, I think sometimes, you know, silence can be sacred, especially with a lot of the issues that we're still facing. You know, the missing and murdered Indigenous peoples awareness, it is more than just, you know, a recent issue. It's something that, you know, dates back to colonial contact. It's something that dates back to colonial conquest and the genocide and erasure of Indigenous peoples and culture. And so I think while there have been moments within the last few years that have been really empowering, and we've seen like a huge uptick in uprising with Indigenous activities and Indigenous awareness and people showing up and wanting to support, you know, a lot of language being built around movements and ideologies, I still think that it's really difficult for Indigenous issues to completely be honored and respected and understood by non-Indigenous peoples. It's still dangerous for us to talk about these things out loud. We still face racism by a colonial implemented police force. We still deal with racism and non-accountability in various, you know, regions, cities, towns from non-Indigenous peoples about the atrocities of the genocide of Indigenous peoples and the impacts of Indigenous erasure through American history and opposition to critical race theory. And so while visibility is wonderful and it's great for us to be able to like push a lot of these issues, the opposite side of it sometimes can also mean that we are putting ourselves in very vulnerable positions because racism is so prevalent still within the settler colonial nation state, whether or not people want to acknowledge that.
You are an artist. Art is a large part of what RISE is based on. So how is art essential to the success of social movements?
That's a very huge question, but you know, art has ties. The history of like art and activism also has ties to propaganda. I mean, you have propaganda throughout the history of Western art. The ways that RISE works within the realm of like contemporary art is working within the realms of Western art. It's working within the Western canon. It's being critical of that. We use subversion and appropriation and deconstruction as methods of resistance. I mean, these are terminologies that are, you know, pretty heavily adopted within the art world, but these are also terminologies and ideologies that have existed as forms of resistance to settler colonialism forever, you know, or sorry, not forever, but like throughout the history of this country. But if, you know, you're talking about propaganda art within the United States, within the formation of the United States and certainly with colonial conquest, you know, we could go back to the Dutch painters who are painting images of the new world, you know, I'm saying that like in quotations, because it was not the new world. It was the world that was occupied by various indigenous peoples. But you have the Hudson Bay, you have, you know, these early painters coming in and painting these really beautiful and elaborate landscapes as forms of advertisement for colonization. And a lot of these paintings do not have any indigenous habitants in the region. It doesn't show what's going on. So it's a very obscured and skewed and problematic perspective that reinforces the need to colonize a region. So, you know, I think utilizing art as a form of creating awareness and representation with people becomes such a motivating and empowering force. I mean, we have seen so many indigenous artists who have taken into their own control and within their own practices the desire and need to create self-representation, where for the longest time we were just completely erased, where for the longest time our representation was undertaken by cis white men. So yeah, this is a huge conversation. This is, you know, something that obviously we can't tackle here, but there is so much power in art, and there is so much power within indigenous culture, and where those two things intersect and meet, there is so much potential for harmony and recovery, beauty and joy. And I think even when we're tackling these really intense issues, there is hope, there is community. And I think that becomes the driving force that will get us into future spaces where all of our bodies are honored and respected.
Thank you, Damien, so much for joining us on Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate it. And I look forward to Friday.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Just sit right back and you hear a tale of a fateful trip that started from this tropic port aboard this tiny ship. The mate was a mighty sailing lad, the skipper brave and sure. Five passengers set sail that day for a 3-hour tour, a 3-hour tour. Again.
here on Gilligan's Island.
Well, that just happened. That smoosh up was created by Little Roger and the Goosebumps back in 1978.
It's alright.
alright if you don't. I'm not afraid of you running away, honey. I get the feeling you won't. There is no use in pretending. Your eyes give you away. Something inside you is feeling like I do. We said all is to say, baby, go ahead and give it to me.